From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the third day of September 2013. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. We'll hear a story about crop insurance from Harvest Public Media. And we'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Along the way today, we'll check in on the agricultural news and the agricultural energy segments. Harry Cooney from GrowMark will join us during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL comes from Stuart Peterson, Pioneer Seeds, Standard Grain, Cornerstone Building Products, and Risk Management Commodities. Thanks to these businesses for their support of WILL agricultural programs.
Let's check now the settlement prices as they finished up in Chicago. For a Tuesday afternoon, futures were lower. The nearby contract for the soft red winter wheat down 6¾ at $6.36½. December there at $6.47¼, down 6¾. And next year's July at $6.60¼, down 6¾. September for the hard red in Kansas City, down 4 cents for the day at $6.96. And 0.75 cents. Corn futures back in Chicago up 3 cents for the nearby September. It finished at $4.98. December was down 6¾ at $4.75¼, and the March at $4.88 in the corn pit, down 6½. March contract at $4.96, rather May at $4.96, down 6½, and July futures at $5.02¼, down 6½ cents. September futures of next year down 6 cents at $5.06, and December of next year a nickel lower at $5.11½ for the harvest month of 2014. September bean futures 11½ cents the gain today, $14.35½ the settlement price. November at $13.86¾, up 29¼, and January at $13.85, up 30¼. March contract in the bean pit at $13.58¼, 24 cents higher, and the May futures at $13.27¾, up 16. July, $13.22, up 14¼. Next year's November, down a half cent at $12.12¾. Bean meal futures finished $17.20 higher. Bean oil down 7 cents. Live cattle futures on the day in the October at $126.20, down 60. September feeders at $157.17½, 25 higher. And the October lean hogs, $88 even, up 37½ cents. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day, nearby contract at $108.57 a barrel, up 92 cents. October RBOB gasoline at $2.86¼. That's 2¼ cents lower. Ethanol futures at $2.48 are 8 7/10 cents higher for the day. Natural gas trading at $3.65¼. That's 7 8/10 higher. And diesel fuel at $3.14¼ a gallon, a penny higher for the afternoon. Gold futures at $1,411.70 an ounce, finished $15.90 higher. The U.S. dollar currently trading up 0.27 at 82.35 on the afternoon. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Sunny skies, a high of 78 degrees on a north wind at 3 to 5 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear and a low of 52. Winds will be calm. Tomorrow, sunny and a high of 83. Wednesday night, mostly clear, low of 60. West-northwest winds by then at 5 miles an hour. And then on Thursday, sunny skies and 83. Winds will remain calm. Thursday night, clear and cool with a 58-degree low. And on Friday, sunny, a high of 84. By the time we get to Friday night for football, mostly clear and a low of 63 degrees. And Saturday, sunny skies and 87. Saturday night, partly cloudy and 66. Sunday, sunny and 89. Sunday night, mostly cloudy and 66 and partly sunny on Monday with a high of 89 degrees. You'll notice that there is no rainfall in the forecast, although I think a bit later in the program, Don Day might tell us about an opportunity coming up next week. He, of course, is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and will join us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. It's a Tuesday afternoon here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us for this third day of September to take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace is Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Well, next week we get a USDA report, and actually this afternoon we get a delayed report as well. Crop progress reports are out. I suppose many are wondering what's really happening with the corn crop. Will they give us a better idea or not?
Oh, I'm sure we'll get an idea, but as we look at it, I don't think the corn crop's going to tell us much on the ratings today because, you know, we started to see some firing, we started to see some the corn developing and starting to dry out, and it's going to look worse, so it's going to go down automatically this time of year. But the beans and which ones got rain and what we look at here is going to be a big deal. And then we're going to look and see, you know, a lot of rain did fall in some areas, but there's a lot of areas that didn't.
What's the trade feeling about the size of the crop at this time? USDA, of course, is due to come out with their next estimates next week.
Well, I think the corn number, I think that everybody is feeling pretty comfortable that we're going to have a decent corn crop. The bean number, it's whether it's above or below 40 bushel here right now, and we sort of feel the trade's looking at a 40 bushel yield as we speak right now, and it's whether it comes up from there or goes down from there and what we do from here on in as far as the price goes, Todd.
$13.86¾ is the correct price for the day because that's where the settlement was, and the trade is always right, but does it mean that we have more upside potential in this marketplace?
Oh, I think that, you know, as we continue or start to see some yields, start to see what the government says next week and a few things along those lines, there's potential for this market to go on up 50 cents to a dollar. But, you know, it's going to take some poor yields. It's going to take, continued hot weather and not rain in some of those areas.
Who is trading in the markets for soybeans today, in particular that 30-cent jump in the November and the January contracts?
Well, I think that we saw funds exiting and also some small specs when they jumped up last night. When it jumped through the $14 mark, I think that basically, or close to that, we saw some, people had stops and some liquidation there. You know, we did see the funds check out of a lot of beans, I think 44,000 contracts of beans last week, so reduced their open interest that way. So, like I say, I think that it's going to depend a lot on how we look. You know, the corn yields coming in from the south are looking very good for early yields, anywhere from 200 to 260 in some areas down there. And some of the corn looking like it will get started here soon. We are seeing basis levels drop off 15 to 20 cents today in a lot of the areas for the corn, looking for corn maybe coming up the river from the south to the north, and also a few early fields being combined in some areas the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, the quotes that you gave us, are those for dry land or irrigated fields, or do you know?
I do not know. It would come over one of our news wires today. It said that Arkansas, Mississippi, and Kentucky have been reporting yields over 200 and as high as 260. So, you know, those are areas we don't look at stuff like that. Some in southwest Indiana combined about 400 acres and was 240, and that was that's dry bushels too. So,
holy smokers!
But they also said that farmer, what he's got combined, then he had a 2 week break before they got back in the field, so he's not looking for the next round to be quite that good.
Yeah, 240 at what moisture? Do you know?
That was dry bushels, so I don't know what moisture.
Dry?
That would be what he would get to sell.
Yowza.
Yeah.
Well, that'll make you think, won't it?
That's why the corn didn't follow the beans today.
I guess not. Anything else we need to talk about before I let you go?
No, I think that's about it for today, Todd.
Oh, you've done enough. Thank you so much.
All right,
that's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, will be here in just a moment to take a look at the agricultural news. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, thanking Dave, actually, for filling in for me for the next couple of weeks as I'll be traveling with some little ag panels to the state of Iowa.
Agricultural market reports on WILL are made possible with support from Busey. Small business is the next big business. So Busey offers solutions to fit growing business needs, from customizable lending options to succession planning. Busey, your dream, our promise.
In agricultural news, Shengwei International Holdings Limited announced today that it has entered into a facilities agreement with Rabobank International and other creditors to obtain about $4 billion in debt financing to fund its pending acquisition of Smithfield Foods. The merger is conditioned on Smithfield shareholder approval. Smithfield shareholders are scheduled to vote on the transaction at a special shareholders meeting to be held on September the 24th. Meanwhile, one of Smithfield Foods' largest shareholders says it plans to vote against the Shengwei takeover bid. Starboard, which owns about 5.7% of Smithfield's common stock, says it wants more time to seek other proposals that would offer greater shareholder value. Starboard is currently in the process of working with possible buyers to construct an alternative all-cash proposal from a single entity for the acquisition of Smithfield. The International Grains Council today says that Brazil's soybean plantings next crop year are expected to rise 5% to a record 29 million hectares. Brazil is projected to be the world's largest exporter of soybeans in the current year that ends on September 30th. Brazil's corn plantings are delayed in southern regions due to cold weather, and in some areas, domestic prices barely cover the cost of production. And these could be key factors in encouraging growers to shift to soybeans, that according to the IGC. The shift in crop acreage is most likely in the states of Paraná and Rio Grande do Sul. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development today says that the annual rate of inflation across developed economies rose for the third straight month in July. Figures released today showed that the consumer price in its 34 member countries rose by 1.9% in the 12 months to July. Across OECD members, energy prices rose by 4.5% in the 12 months to July. Among large developing economies, the inflation picked up in Indonesia and South Africa, but fell in Brazil, Russia, and India, and was unchanged in China. And scientists today say that New Zealand had its warmest winter since record-keeping began more than a century ago. The average nationwide temperature was 49.1 degrees Fahrenheit for June, July, and August. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming and will be filling in for me for the next couple of days as I make my way to Iowa to the appreciation dinners that the Andersons will sponsor in Everly tomorrow at 6:30. If you're a customer, you can come at 5:30 and there's dinner. 6:30, of course, open to everybody. We'll have a Will Ag panel. Jackie Vakes and Mike Zuzula will be there, along with Elaine Cubb and Sue Martin. That's tomorrow evening in Everly, Iowa at 6:30. And then we'll do the same thing again on Thursday at 12:30. That's when the Ag Panel starts. That's in Astorville. All the details are online at willag.org. Just look in the Outlook Meetings calendar. Now up next, Bill Wheelhouse from Harvest Public Media will be along to take a look at last year's crop insurance payouts in Livingston County, Illinois.
We'll grab this one here.
That is the sound of curiosity on this sweltering day in mid-August, surrounded by healthy 8-foot-tall corn stalks. Doug Wilson peels back the husk to see how his corn is looking. The verdict?
I'm seeing an ear that there is probably about inch to an inch and a half tip on the end of where kernels did not pollinate. Last year, it wouldn't have been unusual to see tipping back of half the ear width, 3 or 4 inches long, and so that just kind of shows the difference.
Last year, Wilson lost nearly half his corn to the drought. It was his worst harvest in more than 30 years of farming. But today, less than a year later, he's not suffering financially at all.
You know, you carry homeowner's insurance and hope your house doesn't burn down. Well, we carry crop insurance hoping our crops don't burn down, but last year they burned down. kind of literally.
And the burn was so severe in Livingston County that about $154 million returned to the county in crop insurance indemnities, tops in the country. Why the big payout in Livingston County? It was in the heart of the drought. The University of Illinois' Bruce Sherrick, who tracks such issues, says it was a happy accident. The heat baked Livingston County right at the time of pollination, and a high percentage of farmers carried crop insurance there. Checking in at a local bank, they'll tell you that $154 million has had a huge impact.
We had individuals without the crop insurance, they probably would have had a third of a normal year's worth of gross income last year relative to them having a relatively normal year because of the insurance.
That is banker Gary Bresner, who works in the county seat of Pontiac, Illinois.
They were still buying machinery and equipment because they did not get devastated like they would have done had they not had their insurance coverages.
It's no surprise, really, that here in Livingston County, crop insurance is praised. Many of the folks I talked to credited crop insurance with saving the local economy, where the jobless rate is at 9%, and where the state of Illinois closed a women's prison this year as part of budget cuts. And many here recall the days when drought meant years of economic hardship. Tim Kelly employs about 30 people at his John Deere dealership in Pontiac. Business is a little slow this month, he says, leaning against a green combine, but not like it was when severe drought hit in 1988. Far fewer farmers carried crop insurance then. He says his dealership was empty, and it took a couple of years to get back to normal.
If you can keep a farmer with money in his pocket, he's going to spend it. That's how they always have been and always will be. So if the farmer makes a dollar, then everybody else that works for the farmer, the implement dealer, the grocer, everybody is benefited by if a farmer can make money. So,
as Congress again tries to negotiate a five-year farm bill this fall, farmers and others in rural America point to this impact as the reason why crop insurance exists. And farmers do have some skin in the game. In Livingston County, for example, farmers paid about $9 million for their share of the premiums. The government's share, though, was close to $11 million. The government was also on the hook for a large portion of the payouts. And that large payout draws plenty of attention from government spending critics. Others fault how crop insurance influences farming decisions. Claire O'Connor is with the Natural Resources Defense Council, an environmental group that recently released a report critical of crop insurance. O'Connor says the program should be reformed to encourage farmers to use conservation methods, something she says current crop insurance programs don't do.
It charges farmers using a formula that doesn't distinguish between farmers who are degrading their soil and farmers who are regenerating their soil in order to be more resilient. It's almost like a car insurance company that would charge more to a careful driver than to a reckless driver.
Today's subsidized policies are certainly popular with farmers. For the 2013 crop year, more than 270 million acres are covered, continuing a steady annual increase since 2008. What crop insurance and other farm subsidies look like in the future is an important part of the farm policy discussion in Washington. With drought so fresh in their mind, Midwestern corn farmers continue to tell Congress they are willing to give up other types of farm payments in exchange for the protection that crop insurance brings. In Livingston County, banker Gary Bresner offers one key takeaway from the 2012 disaster, at least for Livingston County.
We're going to be better off for quite some time because of last year's safety net.
The hope for many of these farmers is that some kind of clarity will emerge out of Washington this fall on the future safety net. However, there's no insurance for that. Bill Wheelhouse, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a cooperative effort of public broadcasting stations in the Midwest covering farm and food production issues.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
This is willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's take a look now at what's been happening with the energy markets and agriculture. Harry Cooney is on the phone line from GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Harry.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. Well,
since we last talked about a month ago, a lot has happened, and much of it in the Mideast. Syria is top of mind for Washington, D.C., and apparently for traders of energy.
Well, you're exactly right. You hit it right on the head. Syria is the big topic here, and it allowed crude oil prices to rally sharply last week. And in fact, crude oil topped $110 a barrel for about the first time in a year or two, and challenging the old highs of 2011 up around $115 is definitely within the cards, especially if we start seeing some more nervousness come out of the Middle East. Syria, we really don't get that much oil, or the world doesn't get that much oil out of Syria. It's more of the instability that that brings to the entire Middle East region. For example, Iran, of course, a lot of oil is produced in Iran. Iran at times can be friendly to Syria. Also, the Russians have connections to Syria. And so it's a lot of these other countries that are major oil-producing countries. That's the big concern. So it's the instability that it brings to the region as opposed to really a lot of oil output that the world gets from that country itself.
I know you can be a bit of a technician. You mentioned that $114, $115 level, and there are times when the market simply looks at it and says, hey, we need to go there. I wonder what it is we can help make us go there. Will they push it?
Yeah. Well, I think they will, because I look at daily charts. When you ask about the charts, I look at daily charts, weekly charts, and monthly charts, and I have some signals on each one of them. And you know, the big moves tend to occur when they're all in one direction. However, it's very difficult to get all the signals on each one of those three charts to be in agreement. Right now, for example, in crude oil, we do have all three charts, the daily, the weeklies, and the monthlies, in what I call the buy mode when you look at some of the signal indicators that I follow. That is interesting, and that does tell me that potentially we can run up higher and test that 2011 high, which would be around the $115 level. You go beyond there, and then you go all the way back to 2008 when crude oil rallied to $147 a barrel. No indication that that's going to happen, but it just right now the charts are in a bullish mode, and for the time being, traders are going to be buying dips. What should end users be doing? They should have inventories full. Inventories on diesel fuel should already be filled up from some of our talks we had already. Propane inventories filled up also. There's still a lot of talk in the industry about a large grain drying season on corn. Now, whether that's lessening a little bit here just lately is debatable. Some people feel that the crop size has come down just a little bit, and with some of the warm, dry weather, maybe the crop will eventually be drying on its own naturally in the field. But with the late plantings and the cool mid-summer weather, definitely, that is definitely something to watch to see how much of this grain drying really does occur.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Harry Cooney. He's with GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Back in just a couple of minutes, we'll take a look at the weather forecast from Don Day at Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Welsh Rarebit Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1752, people rioted in the streets, thinking that the British government had swiped 11 days of their lives when September 3rd became September 14th. Pope Gregory XIII dropped the Julian calendar and adopted the Gregorian calendar. By the way, some other countries, including Russia, did not adopt the new standard till the 20th century. In 1827, John E.W. Keeley, an American inventor, created quite a stir when he claimed that he had discovered a new physical force powered by good old H2O. He suggested he could produce what he called intermolecular vibrations of ether from a single quart of water enough fuel to move a 30-car train from Philadelphia to New York City. In 1875, Ferdinand Porsche was born. He was an Australian engineer who designed the VW Beetle in 1935. In 1883, Harold DeForest Arnold was born, an American physicist. His research led to the development of long-distance radio communication. He oversaw the first transcontinental demonstration of radio telephone in 1915. The signal went from New York City to Arlington, Virginia, then to San Francisco, and finally to Hawaii. Arnold later became the first director of research at Bell Telephone Labs. And in 1912, the first cannery opened in England. It was to supply food to the Royal Navy. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Don Day is on the phone line from Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Tell me about the weather forecast in the Midwest to begin with. We'd like some rain.
Yeah, I'm sure that folks are wondering, is it ever going to rain again? We've hit this hot and dry spell here, and at least as we go through the next few days of this week, the thunderstorm activity is going to be real spotty. I see an opportunity for portions of Minnesota, portions of South Dakota, Nebraska, maybe western Iowa to get some scattered showers and thunderstorms at the tail end of the week and over the weekend. But the next 5 days or so, it's going to be very skimpy when it comes to precipitation chances. We do see better precipitation chances coming into the Midwest, especially early to mid next week. That will come with some cooler temperatures. So rain on the horizon, yes, but through the rest of this week and into the weekend, it's going to be quite spotty. We've got to hope for next week to be more productive.
Do you think next week's rainfalls will be widespread and heavy enough that it will help out, probably not the corn crop, but at least the bean crop?
Well, I think there's that possibility. A lot of it's going to depend on where a cool front sags out of south central Canada and sort of stalls out, and where the best moisture gets in contact with that frontal boundary. And that's going to be something that we won't be able to fine-tune until we get a little bit closer. But from what we're seeing right now, beginning late Sunday and into Monday and Tuesday, that's when from the Dakotas to Minnesota, Iowa, eastern Nebraska, portions of Illinois and Indiana have the best chances of rain.
And let's check in on the crops around the world. Start with China, where they raise the second largest corn crop on the planet.
Well, right now, the forecast is quite good when it comes to prospects of rain in China. They are looking at most of that country having some pretty good chances of shower, thunderstorm activity, as well as most of that country going to be cooler than normal. A little bit stormy right now over eastern Asia, and China will get some rain from that pattern.
Other places around the planet you've been watching and that we need to take care of?
Well, right now, there are sections of Europe that have a little bit like a sandwich. The western, far western, and far eastern areas of Europe are going to be cool and wet, while in portions of the Ukraine, especially the western areas, portions of central Europe are going to be warmer and drier than normal.
Thanks so much, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. I'll be heading Don's way, by the way, later this afternoon. I won't make it all the way out to Wyoming, but we'll be in northwest Iowa at the Andersons in both Everly and Astorville tomorrow and on Thursday. I hope you can catch up with us. You can find out all the details in our Ag Outlook panel section of the willag.org website. I'm Todd Gleason.